Yes, thank you, Chris. You know, before I start talking, I would like to say that I got a lot of questions from people of the conference. And the main question was, could you please tell us what is the difference in between summary and prospects and overview and outlook? Yes, so, but let me do my job, yes, and so here we are, Santa Barbara workshop, a quantum gases conference, and that's who I am, yes. So, but before I say something about our conference, what we did here and so on, I would like to place this transparency sheet, which shows the following. That actually, very many times we are asked, what is this Bose-Einstein condensation, what are quantum gases, and so on. And let me tell you that during the last 9 years, especially after the discovery of Bose-Einstein condensation at JILA and MIT, this field has developed tremendously. And now we have links to very many other fields of physics, condensed matter physics, low temperature nuclear physics, AMO is atomic molecular optical physics, quantum information, mathematical physics, and so on. And this is reflected in the list of participants of our conference. There are people from all these fields are present here. So what we see clearly now is that the field of quantum gases became an extremely multidisciplinary field with a lot of connections to other fields and interest in many other subjects in physics. So what we do usually, we organize, let's say, key events in the field every year or every 2 years. Traditionally, we organize so-called European Conference on quantum gases and Bose-Einstein condensation, which occurs in Europe, and there are now ideas to make the world conference, yes? And at that conference, usually all subjects and branches of the research are presented and so on. This time here at Santa Barbara, the organizers of this workshop decided to act slightly differently. What has been done that several hot topics has been selected as main subjects of this meeting. And this includes, this includes Fermi gases, rapidly rotating systems, and then atoms in a lattice, low dimensional and spinor systems. Really, in those three directions, we have now an enormous progress and very interesting results, and this is one of the reasons why we did so. Actually, what I am supposed to do is to say, what do we know, what is supposed to happen, what kind of exciting physics we are supposed to reveal in the near future, and what kind of knowledge we deliver to other fields. And so let me briefly summarize in this respect, yes. Fermi gases, we had a very interesting discussion during 2 or even 3 days of the conference, and experimental groups at JILA, MIT, Innsbruck, Duke, ENS, Rice, and also Massimo Ingusio was placed here. You know, Massimo, I was making this transparency yesterday, not today. So maybe I should have placed you in the lattice part. And there were interesting... Okay, fine. Thanks. And that was very interesting and stimulating, sometimes a little bit hot, theoretical discussion, and that's what usually happens with theorists, yes? Everybody who is doing something is saying that the guys who were doing research previously did something not very well and so on. Otherwise, he doesn't justify his work, yes? Unless one is really discovering something tremendous, which does not happen very often, unfortunately. Yes, so Jason Ho gave a very stimulating talk, putting emphasis what are the main things in the field of Fermi gases and so on. Alan Griffin, Kathy Levine, Aurel Bulgak, Mari Lucio Fallo, Chiara Minotti, they gave very interesting presentations at our panel discussions. And then Sandro Stringari gave a very stimulating talk related to the revealing the presence of superfluidity in the system, free expansion and so on. And Dima Petrov discussed the few body physics related to bosons, but in the same way to fermions. And we had our distinguished guests, Duncan Haldane and Subi Sajdev, and Duncan explained us that, as I understood from the discussion with him, that in the case of in the Fermi case that we are discussing, there is no quantum phase transition, but if we rotate the Fermi gas very quickly, then the quantum phase transition can be present there. In contrast to that, Subi Sajdev said that even in the non-rotating system, not in the fermion one, but in the boson one, there can be phase transition related to the peculiar behavior of vortices in the atomic and molecular phase. And here is the name of Eric Cornell. And I can tell you secretly why it is written here with red color. Because I now consider the theoretical talk of Eric Cornell as the most clear and stimulating theoretical talk at this conference. No, and in my soul, I already converted Eric into a theoretician. So when we organize the next theoretical workshop, which will be at least in a couple of years, Eric will be an invited theoretical speaker. And let me hope that he will accept the invitation. Yes? So let me just summarize what's in here. So we are considering two component Fermi gas, blue and green fermions, which are fermions into internal states. And what we know is, we know that we have Feshbach resonance. This is the dependence of the scattering length on the magnetic field. So here the interaction is attractive, scattering length is negative. We have the usual VCS theory, Cooper pairing of particles next to the Fermi surface with opposite momenta. This theory is very well developed. Here on this side, where the scattering length is positive and large, particles, fermions, form weakly bound bosonic molecules. And what has been done, these molecules were boson-condensed, and people measured the lifetime. And under this condition, where the size of the molecule is much smaller than the mean interparticle separation, now very many things are clear, almost everything. What is not clear completely, what is happening here? And there is abbreviation, SIR. What does it mean? Strongly interacting regime. You know, to write all the time, strongly interacting regime, three words is far too long. Therefore, I invented this abbreviation. If you don't like it, I can change it. So here, as Eric clearly explained us, we have two cases. Narrow Feshbach resonance, where a significant part of the wave function is sitting in the closed scattering channel, and wide resonance, where it's opposite, and here we have universality. Universality in the sense that right at resonance, there is only one parameter of the dimension of energy, and this is just Fermi energy, density in the power 2/3 divided by the mass multiplied h bar squared. Yes, and Randy Hewlett and Dima Petrov discussed nicely narrow resonance, and other speakers were mostly touching the regime of a wide Feshbach resonance. So what do we know? We more or less know what is the chemical potential, how it depends on the Fermi energy, and this parameter beta, which determines the difference of the chemical potential from the ideal Fermi gas. These are the values which more or less follow from theory Monte Carlo calculations and from the experiment. We know a very, very interesting phenomenon, which was discussed by Deborah Jean and Wolfgang Ketterle, that even here, even on the negative side, where molecules as themselves are absent, we get the so-called condensation of fermionic pairs in the strongly interacting regime where K Fermi modulus A is larger than 1. So right here, yes? So how do we understand that? We more or less think that we do, at least some of us. And my simple understanding is that if I'm here in the BCS limit, I have large Cooper pairs, yes, with they have opposite momentum. This is pairing in the momentum space. When I increase the interaction between particles, the size of the Cooper pair becomes smaller, smaller, and then somewhere here, it becomes of the order of the mean interparticle separation, and that's what these fermionic pairs are. Yes, this is just my simple qualitative understanding. Then, what we also have are very interesting experiments at Duke and in Innsbruck, which reveal a peculiar behavior of oscillation frequencies. Just one graph. This is from the experiment of Rudy, radial frequency, ratio of the radial frequency to the radial frequency of the trap. We have very smooth behavior. It decreases in contrast to theory, which says that it has to come here like that. Then it reaches this minimum value, and then it jumps to the collisionless limit. A resonance is here. So, what we think here, that this anomalous behavior of the frequency, and there is also an anomalous behavior of the damping, for example, for the radial oscillations, damping jumps here, and then it becomes small again, that this can be associated to the superfluid, non-superfluid transition. So here it's superfluid, here it's non-superfluid. In the case of Rudy Grimm's experiment, it's not that clear for me why this transition is so sharp, but maybe this is my misunderstanding and you correct me, yes? And it is not yet clear whether this is really the case, and this requires further investigations, but at least it is clear that it's a transition from the collisional to the collisionless regime. Yes, this is clear. And Sandro Stringari presented very nice ideas how one can detect the superfluid state from the free expansion of the sample, that in the non-superfluid state, there is the production of entropy, and this changes the aspect ratio of the cloud and so on. In the superfluid phase, it's not the case. So what is supposed to happen? We are going to reveal the type of pairing which happens in this strongly interacting regime. We are now thinking how to describe this pairing, in which terms, which hydrodynamics works, and Kathy Levine gave a very nice presentation on this subject, and people talked about that, yes. But what we also are going to reveal is, what is the transition temperature? Whether it goes something like that. Yes, here in the BEC limit, it's clear what this is. It's roughly speaking of 0.2 of Fermi energy. Then it can go slightly down, and then in the BCS limit, we also know, we don't know what it is here. Yes, and this is a subject of theoretical investigations, and experiments will give an answer to this question. So what is interesting here, that these studies are linked to the studies of neutron matter, because they have related phenomena. They are linked to the studies of high temperature superconductivity, and that's why they attract large interest of people from different communities. So that's what is happening now, and that's what we expect, and these will be very interesting investigations here. So, therefore, in this respect, I expect a very, very interesting developments in this direction, let's say, within 1 year, 1.5 years, and so. With regard to theoretical calculations, it's a very difficult problem, and I expect that the developments will be more or less similar to those with the calculation of the shift of the transition temperature, where each subsequent Monte Carlo calculation was improving the previous one, and it was during many, many years, and eventually the results converged to a certain value. So it will take quite some time. Question. Do we really have a possibility to achieve the ordinary BCS pairing, which requires extremely low temperatures? Theoretically, we know more or less everything, what's going on there, except maybe small details. What about experiment? This is still a question not to me, but we have to answer it. Another question, molecular BEC. I said about that in this regime, we more or less know everything. What is more or less? Not exactly everything, but many things. Is there something interesting to happen here? With regard to strongly interacting regime, I said that we have an intention to deliver our knowledge to nuclear matter physics, to superconductivity physics, and so on. What about here? Very simple idea. You know, what has been revealed in these experiments was an extremely long lifetime of these weakly bound bosonic molecules consisting of two fermions. So, but it's finite. It's from once, can be 1 second, 20 seconds, it's finite. So let's do the following. Let's create this molecule, come in with light, the light transfers it to the excited electronic state, and then another light, laser light, transfers it to the ground state, ground molecule state, even to the singlet potential, which is here. This type of experiments have been done by Dave DeMille at Yale with molecules consisting of bosonic particles. It's a very nice way of creating ground state molecules, which are extremely stable because they are ground state. So what is the problem? It is extremely simple. In the case of molecules consisting of two bosonic atoms, the collisional decay is very strong, many orders of magnitude faster than in the case of molecules consisting of fermions, because the Pauli principle is absent. So, therefore, the experiments of Dave DeMille were at extremely low densities, 10 to 10, up to 10 to 11, even smaller, yes? So, otherwise his molecules decay due to collisions. So, low density, very small production, so very few molecules you get. Then, if I do the same experiment with molecules consisting of fermionic atoms, they live seconds. Then, seconds at densities 10 to the 13th, as has been revealed in many experiments. So, what it means is that this is a very nice way of producing ground state molecules. So, we can deliver this to molecular physics. Why this is interesting? First of all, this will be Bose-Einstein condensation of ground state molecules and so on. But second, look, here let me speculate a little bit, introduce a little bit of a fantasy. Let us assume that we are making experiments with mixtures of fermions. People do experiments either with potassium or with lithium. Let's do it with a mixture. Then I can create a similar molecule. This is my heavy fermion, this is light fermion. Yes, it will be the same. It will be the same long-lived. Yes, I calculated that already. Yes, I won't tell you the results. But then, if I transfer this molecule to the ground state and then polarize it in the electrical magnetic field, this will be a dipolar gas. This will be a gas of dipoles. And this is now the aim of people who are working in molecular physics, to create dipolar systems. People do it in various ways. John Doyle by buffer gas cooling, and Gerard Meyer by deceleration in time-dependent electric fields and so on. So, why these dipolar gases are interesting? This is a completely different system. Just because two dipoles interact with each other via long-range anisotropic dipole-dipole interaction, d squared divided by r cubed. This drastically changes the properties of a Bose-Einstein condensate, introduces instabilities, changes the spectrum, and so on. It just will be a new system at hand, and then, once we provide molecular physicists with this, they will provide us with a very new interesting system which we can study. So it will be just a mutual interest. Yes. So this is the idea. Yes. So now I have to switch the subject. Yes. And then say about fast rotation. Yeah, in this case, you know, sorry? What is the question? The question was, if I am dealing with these molecules, with these fermionic mixtures, do I expect a phase transition or pairing or so on? Yes. The answer is, yes, I do. And what kind of phase transition? It depends, for example, whether this is 50-50, yes, then there are some discussion in literature, and Vincent Liu will just discuss this in the near future here, yes. And then if these concentrations are different, then different types of pairing can occur in the system. I have no time to talk about that, but yes, there will be a phase transition, and the fermionic physics with mixtures is expected to be more interesting even than with just potassium and lithium. But it's too early to say what the final answer is. And there are now several people working on that. Okay, fast rotation. So the second hot topic discussed here was fast rotation. Yes, and we had, here it's quite different from fermions. Here we only have one distinguished experimentalist present here. Now I should treat Eric as an experimentalist. So. And also implicitly the experiment of Jean Dalibard was present. All information about his experiment was in the air. And we had very many interesting theoretical presentations by Nicola Wilkin, Sandy Fetter, Chris Pethick, Michael Gunn, Nigel Cooper, and I also put here Eric Müller because he was also rotating the stuff in his talk with his ideas. Yes. You know, Eric, since I'm specifying everything, I have to put you somewhere. Yes. I put it here, yes? So, then, what is here? We now understand the behavior of vortices, how this occurs in the GILA and ENS experiments, and this is due to Jason Ho, the understanding of the density profile, and we understand how the disappearance of the vortex lattice occurs. Let me say, understand to a large extent. It is a little bit more careful due to Sandy Fetter, Chris Pethick. Yes, so this is it. What we are aiming for is to understand whether we can achieve the so-called quantum Hall regime, strongly correlated states. And there were interesting presentations by Nicola Wilkin, Michael Gunn, Nigel Cooper. And let me tell from my naive understanding of the subject, I would say that theoretically very many things are well known, yes? Let's say, not everything, of course, and there is a large area for research, but very many things are known. And from the experimental side, what we have, a remarkable experiment of Eric, where just rotating his initial, let's say, cloud, with a frequency which is extremely close to the radial frequency, which is up to 0.997, maybe slightly less in some experiments. He achieved, first of all, the 1D regime, just because the gas expands in the radial direction and you achieve this pancake, yes? And then, this frequency is very close to the critical frequency, to the third frequency, and we expect the appearance of these quantum Hall states. And then, you know, I will explain here everything from my naive and simple understanding. My question to Eric was, and to everybody, I was discussing it with Nigel, with Mike, how do we know that we have this strongly interacting quantum Hall regime? Then, you know, what I will do, and specialists will probably criticize me, do it mildly, yes, the very well-known picture, which in my interpretation, how energy depends on the feeling factor. What is, for people who do not work in the subject, the feeling factor is the ratio of the number of particles to the number of vortices, or better say, in this case, saying carefully, the ratio of the number of particles to the angular momentum and divided by two, yes? So, this is energy, so this is the Laughlin state, yes? Famous Laughlin state, this is Pfaffian state, and so on, and here we have vortex lattice, yes? And then, what we would have in a trap? Because in the trap, where we have a trapping potential, the feeling factor depends on the coordinate. It's the largest in the center of the trap. Each of these states is non-compressible, so we have these steps, yes? And that's what Nigel Cooper was talking about. So. What Eric says, that experimentally it would be nice to reveal this peculiar density profile, and just which will be a clear indication that we have this. What I would say here, let us then look what else we can do. Experimentally, we can think of measuring two particle and three particle local correlations. What is local correlation? It's an average of the four field operators in the case of G2, two particle correlation. Psi dagger, psi dagger, psi psi, all in the same position. And it's divided by the square of the density. This is something which people say trivial. This is the so-called Hellman-Feynman theorem, because it's in the Hamiltonian, it's equal to the derivative of the total energy with regard to coupling constant. Look here in the graph. Here it's zero. So what it means is that if I measure this correlation function, I get almost zero somewhere here, and then it starts to grow. And this is nothing else than the process of photoassociation. what this is. Two atoms approach each other, they absorb a photon and go to the excited electronic states. And there are very many experiments studying this photoassociation process. So if I do that, what I see is that G2, so up to here, G2 is almost zero, then it starts to grow. And Eric will tell us later whether it's realistic to think about photoassociation process in this system. Another process is three-body recombination. You know, when people talk about Bose-Einstein condensation, ground state, and so on, about all these nice Bose condensate, strictly speaking, people are a little bit lying. Why? Just because, yes, it's a ground state of the atomic system, but on the other hand, particles can collide and form bound molecular states. This occurs in the three-body collisions. Three particles collide, two of them form a bound state, and the third one carries away the binding energy. Two particle collisions cannot lead to the formation of molecules. The third particle is required. Then they should approach each other to a very small distance, and this is the so-called three-particle correlator, G3. Yes? Then, G3, the behavior of G3 in this system is different, because the Pfaffian state is determined in such a way that the three-body correlation is zero. So, therefore, from here, it's like that, and then it grows, yes? So, quite different behavior compared to this one. So measuring local correlations by measuring, let's say, photoassociation process of three-body recombination can provide available information for identifying the presence of the strongly correlated state in the system. I was discussing from time to time with Michael and Nigel, oh, thank you, Chris, the idea of revealing strong correlations through the measurement of the one-body density matrix. Actually, this is a very difficult problem because one first to calculate that and so on. The thing is that if I'm in the Laughlin state, the distance scale which is present is the so-called magnetic length, which is called in quantum Hall magnetic length. This is h bar divided by m omega in the power of 1/2 rotation frequency. And it would be very interesting to understand what is the behavior of this quantity for all these values of nu here in such a way that if I can do juggling experiment or whatever spectroscopy, I can just reveal what this correlation is. Yes? So, I then would like to say the following. I don't hear. Well, ask Eric.
We count the word we divide.
Yes, okay. And very interesting question occurs here, which we did not yet discuss. What the discussion was about is the system where we were considering circularly symmetrical trap, where the frequencies are equal to each other. What happens if one of them is smaller than the other one? Let's say somewhat smaller. Let me remind you that there was a very interesting experiment of Jean Dalibar, and this experiment is absolutely clear. He had this system. Then if you rotate with a frequency which is close to the lowest of the two, in this direction, x, the centrifugal force cancels the trapping potential, the motion of atoms becomes free, and the gas explodes to infinity in one direction. If I put rigid walls or quartic potential like Jean does, then what do I get? I get a system which is extremely elongated in one direction. In this direction, it is still trapped. I get what I call 2D gas in a narrow channel in the presence of a gauge field. Just because I rotate. So what kind of new one-dimensional or two-dimensional physics we have here? This is still an open question, not very open because people are working on that. This is a very interesting system, and I presume that in future experiments we will reveal a lot of interesting physics here. So then what I do now, because otherwise I will get a red card, yes, and will be removed from the screen, yes. So, I also have, let me skip physics here, yes? You will ask me questions. because you know what my goal also here is to mention that there was another discussion, low dimensional atomic systems, atoms in electric spin or condensates and quantum information. What we learned here is that the strongly interacting regime in 1D, the so-called regime of Tong-Girardot, has already been reached by Immanuel Bloch for the atoms in electrons. In the gas phase, it's not yet reached, and there are several experimental groups working in this direction. They already reached the intermediate regime, and Trey Porto was talking about that. We learned that there is a very interesting spin dynamics for spinor condensates. Klaus Zennstock, Mike Chapman, and Eric Cornell were discussing that. Yes, and then what I also learned, I learned that there are very interesting ideas in the direction of quantum entanglement between the atoms, and that's what Ignacio, Klaus Mellmer, and Liu were discussing. Yes, Maxim Olshany was discussing interesting effects of preserving interference in the Tong-Girardot regime. And I also learned from Fei Zhu that personally, I have to learn much more about lattice systems, how many phases are there and so on, in order to be as sophisticated as real condensed matter physicists are. Yes. So what else we learned? You know, this sentence I wrote yesterday before the talk of Alain Aspect. What I wrote here, understanding of the formation of trapped Bose-Einstein condensates. Yes. And after his talk today, before the word understanding, I have to put here misunderstanding, in the sense that people still have to work in this direction and understand a little bit more what is happening. We understand the spin dynamics, we understand these phenomena, we understand ideas towards quantum information processing and so on. And all these directions will be in our agenda during next month. What I would like to say here, that why I put all these subjects, spinor condensates, lattice, 1D, and so on, just in one block, because that is a very interesting idea. Chris, I'm sorry, 1 minute. Let us, the idea is interesting, but I lost my last transparency sheet. Oh, yes, just a second. Oh, yes, I lost it. Unfortunately, I lost it. Okay. Okay, but let me just say in words. I lost my last, one of the last. Let me consider one-dimensional spinor Bose gas. These are spin 1/2 bosons. Yes. In the if three interaction constants are equal to each other, this is an exactly solvable model by the Bertrand-Zatz in the gas phase, not in the lattice. And then, what we can have, we can study the eigenstates of an isotopic spin, because in this case there is an additional quantum number in the case of spin 1/2 bosons, isotopic spin, which ranges from half the number of particles, this is the so-called ferromagnetic ground state, to zero. And as it has been revealed in literature some time ago, the states for zero isotopic spin, they are completely different from the ground state. Yes, so then, very simple example, what kind of new phenomena you can get. Spin excitations. Imagine you are in the ground state and you have spin excitations in the system of spin 1/2 bosons. This is equivalent to relative oscillations of two Bose gases, which Eric Cornell was studying some years ago, because there is a spin rotation symmetry in the system. Then, what we know in the weakly interacting regime. In the weakly interacting regime, if I look in literature, there is a very old paper by Sandy Fetter from 1970 and something, which says that there is this soft mode, which is h squared k squared divided by 2m, where in the weakly interacting regime m is just the bare mass of particles. Yes, right. So this is then what happens if I enter the strongly interacting regime. In the strongly interacting regime, the relative oscillations of two clouds or spin transport, these are two related phenomena, will be strongly suppressed because the wave function vanishes when particles approach each other. The effective mass becomes very large. It is multiplied by the parameter gamma, which is the ratio of the interaction to kinetic energy at mean interparticle separation. So then, what do I have? In a trap, I will have that my usual relative oscillation frequency, omega squared divided by the Fermi energy, this is chemical potential, will be smaller by a factor of gamma. I get extremely small, extremely slow relative oscillations of the cloud on a time scale, which can be seconds, tens of seconds, and so on. It depends on the parameters. This is just a very simple example, and it was also very interesting mathematically. That did anyone try to obtain the Bogolyubov method from the Bertansatz? Ever? No. And that's what we succeeded in. You know, Bogolyubov method is a perturbation theory. At the same time, in 1D, we have the exactly solvable model, Lieb-Linninger model. Then, let's do the following. Let's obtain the Bogolyubov approach from the Bertansatz. I have a stack of papers like that, yes. I did not reduce them to several sheets. That's what I will do, but that's what one can do from the Bertansatz equations. And then, one has very nice, rigorous mathematical solutions for the wave function, and one can solve these equations and establish these relations. It was very nice mathematical exercise for me, because you know what happened with me, telling frankly. I was doing theory of orbital angular momentum mathematical physics long time ago. Of course, I knew about Bertansatz, but I never touched it. And then, not long time ago, being already over 50, I decided to learn the Bertansatz. And that's what I did. And then, and that's why, and this is because physics, which we are studying, is extremely interesting and requires a lot of knowledge, yes? And in the end of my presentation, I would like to say that it was a very interesting and stimulating conference, and what we should say in the very end. Thanks to KITP for providing us with all these facilities, and thank all of you for participation. Thank you for attention.
Well, first off, I'm a complete outsider. I know nothing about either of these fields. But one remark that you made about there being some feedback from here into high TC superconductivity, I have to say, Kathy has left. I am unconvinced that that the two phenomena are related. Largely because, as far as I can tell, there is no connection between these ideas when applied to high TC superconductivity and the anti-ferromagnetism at zero doping. So before one gets too triumphalist about the connections, I think one should realize that they are not, at least to a complete outsider, it's not clear. I do want to say, however, that it's been very pleasant for me to re-meet two old Cornell graduate students who came as a shy Canadian and a shy immigrant from Hong Kong blossom and lose their shyness.
Thank you.
Just one comment about the detection of quantum Hall state. One of the things that characterize quantum Hall state is that in the original effect, charge relaxes very, very slowly, extremely slowly, because the relaxation of charge is faster the higher the longitudinal conductivity is. And in the quantum Hall state, the longitudinal conductivity is practically zero. So if there is a some non-equilibrium charge distribution, it takes forever to relax.
Okay.
I think that in a quantum Hall effect of the type that you were mentioning here, that was discussed here, one possible way maybe of detecting it is to generate some non-equilibrium accumulation of atoms somewhere at the center of a rotating BC, and then observing how long it takes until it gets back to equilibrium. If the filling factor is such that the ground state is a vortex lattice, there is no energy gap, and therefore there would be a relatively fast relaxation, relatively relative to what would happen in a quantum Hall, in a true quantum Hall state.
Thank you. Thank you. Eric will actually is supposed to tell us whether what we're talking about is relevant or not. Yes. Because he is now the one who understands experiments in this direction. Yes, and Eric, is it relevant?
Can I just say that for a moment I was thinking about something else?
Okay.
So, the short answer is yes, of course.
Yes. Thank you, Eric. Okay.
Well, if there are no other remarks, we should maybe proceed to the last talk of this morning. And continuing this tradition of using these old-age devices here, Tony is going to